This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Right, we're going to go on with the middle, with the milah today of Yishuv. Have you got that? That's where we start from, the Yishuv. How did the English translate it, Joe? You were very upset about it last week.
Sedateness.
Can you explain to me how one acquires Torah with sedateness?
It's
an original translation, but not an authentic one. Beyishuv means sitting. It means with it flesh. Beyishuv, sorry? But Yishuv does. So it means Beyishuv. Beyishuv to be settled, sorry? Not said, Beyishuv means to be settled. To be settled in one's mind. And it involves peace of mind as well. Alright? Beyishuv. I don't have any commas in mind altogether. You see, the printer put the commas in, so we don't have to learn pshat by the printers. The yeshuv is to be able to learn with yeshuv hadas. Yeshuv hadas is that when one's learning, one is mentally relaxed, in the sense that one doesn't have other worries on one's mind. Yeshuv also means that one isn't in a hurry to get off what one's learning. The opposite of yeshuv is when you get impatient with what you're learning. You've got to turn the page already. That feeling that you're not making progress, you've got to turn. Until you turn the page, you haven't made progress. The feeling that progress is made laterally rather than in depth, the feeling that you've got to, in order to make progress, you've got to move further, that's what disturbs Yishuv Hadas. Yishuv Hadas is the ability to sit quietly and to look at what you're learning and to absorb it and to question it and to analyze it and to integrate it and to slowly take it in. That's Yishuv. And that's the way one makes the most progress. Not only does one make a great deal of progress in terms of depth that way, but believe it or not, one also makes the most progress laterally too that way. Because by questioning, you start searching. And your search takes you to all different places. By questioning, by going into something, by considering it, by contemplating it, you look at all sorts of interconnected things. And the beauty of the Torah is all interconnected. There's no one part of the Torah that is disconnected from the rest of Torah. And theoretically, if you sat on one paragraph for long enough, you would cover the whole Torah. Your questioning and your analysis of that paragraph would lead you by one branch or another to every other aspect of Torah, because it's all intertwined. That's why Torah is called a tree. It's called an Eitz Chaim. If you'll take any part of the tree and you'll start following, you'll eventually come to the whole tree. You'll take your finger and start anywhere on the tree and go around. You can get anywhere. There's no part of the tree that is disconnected. One part joins up to the other somewhere, somehow. And so it is with learning. It all joins up. And as one analyzes something that one's busy learning, as one questions it, as one deepens one's understanding and one's appreciation for it, so simultaneously are you appreciating your lateral quantity as well. If you look inside any Gemara, those of you, can you just pass this there, Gemara somewhere on? If you look inside any Gemara, you see a few interesting things. Firstly, we have the text, and on the inside we have the Rashi that explains the text, but on the outside we have Tosfos, who brings every relevant matter in all other volumes to this particular text. So one finds that if you learn through the Tosfos, one is covering a great deal of other subjects as well. Down in the column, down in the side column too, you've also got the references to every interconnected aspect. Here you've also got references to every interconnected aspect. And each page has got this. Each page is full of cross-reference. So you can imagine, if you've learned 100 pages of Gemara with all the cross-references on each page, you've learned probably several thousand cross-references. So you've covered virtually the whole of Shas. If you learn 100 pages properly, you're familiar with virtually the whole of Shas, depending on what Masechta is particularly. But it's feasible through a relatively small amount of textual information, if that is studied properly and it's gone into properly, it is feasible to come into contact with nearly the whole Torah. But for that, one needs Yishuv. You need patience. Perhaps the best translation for Yishuv is patience. the ability to sit quietly and to learn until you understand it properly. Bemikro and Bemishnah. Mikro is the oral law, is the written law, and Mishnah is the oral law. One has to apply oneself to both. Up till there is one section, that's the end of the first section of these 48 midos. Those are the things you've got to do in order to acquire knowledge, in order to really acquire Torah, in order to make Torah yours. Up till here we've been talking about the things you have to do. Now we're talking about the things you mustn't do. There are things that need curtailment as well. There are things which, if one involves oneself in them also, it's counterproductive. One can't, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, do outstandingly well in Torah and at the same time do whatever else one wants. That one can't. There are certain things one has to curtail if one wants to do well in Torah. And here they're listed. Firstly, Bemi'ut Schoira. One has to cut down on Schoira. Schoira literally means business. And this goes back to what we were just learning in the Vilna Gaon this afternoon. One has to, one's business involvement and one's professional involvement has to be somewhat curtailed if one wants to make progress in Torah. The curtailment is necessary for two reasons. Firstly, an excessive business involvement in itself is destructive. As we learned today, a man runs from one part of the world to the other and is busy and is tired. It's not possible after that to be able to dedicate one's mind, beyishuv, to learning. After running around the whole day like a meshugana, with one ambition, and that's to do more, to achieve more, and to earn more, and to make more, and then all of a sudden to switch off from that and to sit down at a shiur quietly, not worry, and not to think, oh, my competitors are still sitting in their offices, and my competitors aren't sitting learning Gemara, they're pretty scheming and planning for tomorrow, and here I am sitting learning Gemara, and what am I going to do about that problem? It's got to be solved by tomorrow, and I've got to do this, and I've got to achieve this, and what am I going to tell my bank manager tomorrow? To be able to switch all that off and just sit the issue by das is not that easy. But secondly, business is one of the things that doesn't have its own limitations. How much does one eat? One eats until one's full. You know when to stop eating. How much business do you do? There's no limit. You just carry on and on and on and on until one falls down dead, chas v'shalom, from a heart attack. But it doesn't have any natural limitations. It doesn't have any natural boundaries beyond one which one doesn't go. And so one finds that one's business and professional life encroach on everything else that one does. And without one noticing it, it just comes, it's like a fungus. It just grows and grows and grows and it takes over everything. It takes over your whole mind. It takes over your family life. It takes over your religious life. It takes over everything. One has to curtail it. One has to cut it and say, Ad kan, up till here and no further. I don't do any more than this. That's how I curtail it. And one can curtail it in two ways. One can curtail it by the amount of money one makes and say, look, I need to make 1,000 rand a month. When I've made 1,000 rand a month, finished, that's it. Or I will design my business so and so many hours a day that I earn my 1,000 rand a month, that's all I need. If the Ribbono Shel Olam wants to give me big brocha and in that time I'm able to earn much more than that, wonderful. But I design my business that should bring me in what I need. That's one way of curtailing. The other way of curtailing is with time. I work until 4 o'clock or until 5 o'clock or until 6 o'clock, but that's it. I don't bring work home. I don't work after hours. I don't work longer than that. I don't work on Shabbos. I don't work on Sundays. There need to be limitations which are introduced and curtailment has to take place. And in addition to that, curtailing business and profession in favor of Torah is also a statement of value. That means my Torah comes first. And that's an important statement of value. And somebody who's unable to curtail his business activities, even for Torah, is a person who's not able to establish that value. And his relationship with Torah is inadequate, and there's no way he's ever going to make the pursuit of knowledge his profession. And that's really the essence of it. What we're looking at in these 48 milas is a way of making a profession out of the pursuit of truth. And whatever else I'm involved in is only an occupation. If I'm a doctor, that's my occupation, but it's not my profession. If I'm a lawyer, that's my occupation, but it's not my profession. My profession is Torah. So how do you do it with these 48 milas, with these 48 steps? That's how one achieves the profession of Torah. And one of the things in that profession is the ability to curtail those things that need to be curtailed. Yes, you may be in business, you may have a profession, you may do well in them, you may excel in them, but they have to be curtailed. That one has to know how to impose limitations on one's business and professional life.
And that's the miyut schoira. Cut it down. The miyut derech eretz, there are two interpretations of miyut derech eretz. There's a Tosfos in Yevamos that takes miyut derech eretz as being also business. One cuts down in business again. And all the Mephoshim ask, how can that be? We've just had miyut schoira. So how can miyut derech eretz mean curtailing business? But on the basis of what we learned today in the Vilna Gaon, it's very easy. There are two kinds of curtailing business. There's curtailing the schoira, that's the physical running around. That has to be curtailed. The tires run out. You've got to cut it down. So that means you earn less. Good, you earn less. Too bad. But you've got more freedom. You've got more time to use your brain. You've got more yishuv. And people who don't value yishuv, what do they value for goodness sake? What is more precious than an hour or two or three to be able to sit by yishuv and to learn Torah? What is more precious? What is there in the world that is more valuable than that? What is there that makes a man more free than the ability to sit down for a few hours and think the yishuv quietly, with patience, without being torn in a million different pieces? What is there more than that? There's nothing. So for that I've got to cut down schoiras, I've got to cut down schoiras. So somebody wants me to deliver something tomorrow, I can't, it can't be tomorrow. So you don't want to buy it from me, then you must buy it from somebody else. But I've got a yishuv to look after. I can't sell myself so totally that even my few moments a day of yishuv, I'm going to sell. If I come home from my work and I'm tired out, so that I don't have the yishuv, that's not the life of a human being. There can be an onus. Rachmana litzlan, it can happen that one is involved in such poverty that one has nothing to eat unless one works like that. Chas v'sholom, it can be such a thing. And there were generations, many generations of Jewish life, where that's the way they lived. And even those people in the ghetto lives who used to porters, who used to carry parcels around, that was their profession. To come home, and before they went home, they used to stop off at the Beis Medrash. And they used to daven Mincha, and they used to daven Ma'ariv, and in between Mincha and Ma'ariv, they used to listen to a little shir. Even the poshita people who were tired out and broken, that little moment of yishuv, they knew when they got home there would also be no yishuv. When they got home, they would have to pull out the money from their pockets, and there would be worries and concerns. How are we going to make out on this? What are we going to eat? What about the children? This, that. No yishuv at home. But there was half an hour of yishuv on the way home. Just that little moment that they used to go into the Beis Medrash, and they used to daven Mincha and Ma'ariv, and hear a little shir in between, or say some Tehillim in between, or learn a bit of Musar in between, whatever it was, that was their opportunity for yishuv. Even they had it. Chas v'shalom, can be that one's deprived even of that. What a curse, what a klola to be deprived even of that. But where we don't have such poverty, where we're living in relative affluence, where we can make do more or less, and we could all work a little bit less than we do, even if it means dropping our standards a little bit. What does it mean dropping our standards? I won't have the TV. I won't have the motor car. I won't have new clothes quite as frequently as I wanted to. My children won't have new clothes as frequently as they would want to. I won't have the swimming pool. I won't be able to go on holiday this year. I'll have to take my holiday at home. That's what we're playing with. I'm not playing with food or a roof over my head. We're not living in that kind of society, Baruch Hashem. What is it really that I'm talking about? So that overseas trip, it's that luxury, it's this, it's that. And I'm prepared to trade that for my yishuv. For my hour a day, my 2 hours a day, to sit quietly with a Gemara, with a Rambam, with a Shulchan Aruch, and just sit and contemplate what is it that the Ribbono Shel Olam wants from me. That we don't trade, that we can't trade. I need to do two things. Miut schoira, I've got to cut down on running around, physical labor in my work. Got to be cut down. There's a limit to how much I can do, and everybody must know his own limit. How much can I do? Not how much can I take physically. Not how much can I do without getting sick. How much can I do and still be able to come home and concentrate at the shiur this evening? That's what the critical thing is. And if I can't, I've got to cut down. I'm doing too much then. And the other is miut derech eretz. That's one's intellectual involvement in business. One has to cut down one's mental involvement in one's business and profession too a little bit. While one's doing one's business and while one's involved in one's profession, it has to be b'ne'emonos, it has to be with complete dedication. Chas v'sholom that anybody should be thinking of other things. We're not on the level that we can handle that. And what we're doing has to be done with excellence, and people have to know and have confidence that we're giving them the best of our work. And it shouldn't be shoddy, and it shouldn't be anything but the best.
But that doesn't mean that one has to work 24 hours a day. That doesn't mean that one has to have one's mind on it 24 hours a day. And miut derech eretz is the ability also to cut down one's mental involvement in one's business as well. To be able to come down and forget about it. So your competitor's sitting in his office still. That's his problem, not my problem. He's sitting in his office worrying about me. He's sitting in his office saying, ah, that competitor of mine. You know what he's doing now? Sitting with Yeshua. Sitting and listening to a shir. Isn't he lucky? Ah, isn't that incredible? How does he manage to do it? And he's sitting jealous of me. And I'm sitting jealous of him. You know what he's doing? He's making more money. He's busy. He's working. He's building. And I'm sitting at home. And that's how the world goes. We spend our time being jealous of each other. We cut down. It's got to be miut chayra and miut derech eretz in order to ensure that we have the required yishuv.
The miut tanuk. Not only that, one also has to cut down on tanuk.
Tanuk is plain and simple pleasure. It's a funny thing, but Torah and pleasure don't go together. You can't learn Gemara in an armchair. Doesn't work. Even if you concentrate well in an armchair, you can't work. The harder your chair, and the more upright, the more the better you learn. You can't sit and learn Gemara smoking a cigar and drinking coffee and tegelach at the same time. It doesn't go. Your learning is going to be inadequate. You're not going to notice the things you need to know. You're not going to be sharp enough. You're not going to make it. Can't be. You learn best on an empty stomach. You learn best when things are not that easy. You learn best when you're suffering a little bit. It's a funny thing, but it is like that. And again, there has to be miut tanuk. What does miut tanuk mean? How much pleasure? Why doesn't the Mishnah tell us how much? When it comes to kiddush, we're told how big the kiddush cup must be. Tzitzis, how big the tzitzis must be. Everything we're told measurements. Here we're told such important things, miut tanuk. Curtail your pleasure, your sensual pleasure a little bit. How much must I curtail? Doesn't matter how much. Just move the boundary line. Cut it down a little bit in favor of Torah. That's all. It doesn't matter how much. We're not talking about how much pleasure. What we're talking about is the act of curtailing the pleasure a little bit. That's what needs to be done. That one is to know. So here you don't go to the Nuremberg, you go and you learn yeshiva instead. That's miu tanuk, and that's one of the memches ways of achieving Torah. Ah, you ask, but they all go to Nuremberg, so they don't have the memches ways of learning Torah. Finish, simple. That's what one has to do. It's miu tanuk. You've got to make a sacrifice. And the sacrifice is in these areas. These are the only things one has to sacrifice for Torah. It's not an awful lot. One has to be mamayit, a little bit less running around in business, a little less mental application in business, a little bit less tanuk. Just cut it down a little bit. Bemiut sheina, a little bit less sleep. We can manage on a lot less sleep than we think. Obviously it has to be watched. One mustn't go crazy on this. Different people need different amounts of sleep. The Tiferes Yisrael says that it is said about the Rambam that he slept 8 hours a day. I haven't seen that. The Tiferes Yisrael says it's said about the Rambam. The Rambam does say that one should sleep 8 hours a day. But that the Rambam himself did or not, I don't know. But that's what the Tiferes Yisrael said, that one should sleep 8 hours a day. The Tiferes Yisrael adds that was when he was young, but after he was about 50, one needs a lot less sleep. And certainly he slept a lot less after he was 50. But in his younger years, he slept 8 hours a day. So I tell you that to show you that if it's correct, that that's in fact what he slept, one can do an awful lot even if you're sleeping 8 hours a day. If one's using one's time correctly, one can do an awful lot in a day. So when we talk about miut sheina, we have to be sensible. It's true that most of us sleep a lot more than we need to. But we have to be careful not to cut it to the point that we can't operate efficiently during the day either. And each person has to find his own balance, and there's no rule for this. Every person is different. And among normal people, it varies somewhere between 5 and 8 hours. Now, people who can manage very comfortably on 5, most people can probably manage very comfortably on between 5 and 6. And some people need a little bit more than that. Each person should find his own level. But miut sheina, again, there's got to be a little bit of a diminishment, a little bit of a curtailment of sleep. When you're tired, and it comes time to go to bed, say to yourself, and you really feel tired, really, that the best thing you feel like doing now is just to drop into bed. You want to be Mekayim the Memches Milus. So what's the time now? 11 o'clock. Good. 11:30 I go to bed. And for half an hour you sit and you do a nice half an hour's learning. Take a Sefer, you take a Gemara, you revise something, you look at a bit of Chumash and Rashi, you take a Mishnah, you look at a Mishnah, you take a piece of Rambam, you look at a Rambam, you take a piece of Shulchan Aruch, whatever you want.
you sit for half an hour that you would have gone to sleep, that half an hour you learn. And it's a wonderful half hour that. A wonderful, wonderful half hour. And at the end of that you go to sleep. And your sleeping is different. And your waking up the next morning is different. Why? Because you've made a deal, you've traded. You traded half an hour of sleep for half an hour of Torah, that means you're a Ben Torah. That means you're a professional. The same as you traded a holiday in Muizenberg for a holiday in Yeshiva, that means you're a professional. You traded a little bit of business for Yeshiva Hadat, that means you're a professional. It means this is what is important to you. And to trade that half an hour just to switch it. It would have been for sleep and you've turned it around, it's going to be for learning. Or one gets up half an hour earlier than one would have. That's this particular Milo. That's this particular kinyan.
B'miyut sicha. We all speak too much. Miyut sicha, a little bit less talking. Less talking usually results firstly in more listening.
One of the reasons we listen so little is because we talk so much. And when we're not talking, we're busy planning what we're going to say when we do talk. And if we didn't talk and didn't prepare our speeches that much, we would find that we're able to listen a lot better. And we would find we're able to listen a lot more accurately. Because when you're preparing your speech, you're listening to find if you can find any riyas in what's going on. That's all you're listening to. Can you find any supports for what you're about to donate to the world? Very often what you hear is more important than what you have to say. And you can gain a lot more and grow a lot more from what you hear and from what you learn and from what you say. Therefore, miut sicha. Cut down the talk a little bit. And particularly the nonsensical talk. In all one's talk there should be meaning. There should be value, not nonsensical talk. That doesn't mean that one never talks about small matters. Sometimes you do talk about small matters, but it's for a reason. To put somebody at their ease. To introduce a subject. To introduce a certain atmosphere into a situation, into a social situation, or into a formal situation. That can be. You know the famous story of the young man who was going on the shidduch, the young yeshiva bocher, and he came for advice to his mashgiach. He says, "Look, what do you talk to her about?" And he says, "Okay, so I'm meeting her tonight. You sit down." Well, and then he says, "Well, you talk nothing to talk to her. What do I talk? Gemara I can't talk to her about. Rambam I can't talk to her about. Shulchan Aruch I can't talk to her. What do I talk to her about?" He says, "You talk to her about family. Talk to her about food. Talk to her about philosophy. There's plenty to talk about." So he figures, you know, the story comes and he sits down and he's going to start off. Look, what did Mashgiach say to me? Family. He says, "Do you have any brothers?" "No." There goes one third of the conversation is gone already. Okay. So what's the next one? Food. He waits a little while because this evening is supposed to go on. After a few moments of silence he says, "Do you like lakshan?" "No." That's two thirds of the conversation gone. He's got now everything depends on the philosophy. So he's praying to the Ribbono Shel Olam that she's a latent philosopher that nobody's yet discovered, and the conversation might in fact flow. What's he going to start? Philosophy. He thinks of Rambam, philosophy, Kuzuri. Well, what's he going to talk? Philosophy. All of a sudden, it's a brainwave. He says, "Tell me, if you had a brother, do you think he would have liked lakshan?" So there are times when one needs to talk nonsense as well, but it's with good intent. It's for shidduchim. It's to make peace between people. It's to put somebody at their ease. Sometimes you do say, "Nice day outside, isn't it? Got any family? Got any children?" It's not terribly important to you at that particular time, but sometimes one does do it. But miut sicha, to cut down on unnecessary conversation.
And the miut tzchok, to cut down on unnecessary laughter. The tzchok is not just laughter at something funny. Tzchok is not laughter at something pleasurable. But tzchok is lightheadedness, light talk, jocularity.
That kind of superficial bantering that goes on between people that is so meaningless and so stupid. And it's not befitting the seriousness of a professional Ben Torah. A man whose mind is occupied in Torah, who's involved in thoughts, who's involved in the pursuit of truth, who's involved in the knowledge of the Ribbono Shel Olam. For him to sit there and involve himself in all the stupid laughter and jokes and nonsense, it's not the way a Ben Torah behaves. And that's something that one has to be careful of. I've spoken to you before about the dangers nowadays of attracting people to Torah by entertaining them with Torah
and allowing Torah to become a source of entertainment. It's not. If people want to become attracted to Torah, that's fine, but they've got to find pleasure in Torah. We don't change Torah to make it pleasurable, and we don't have to turn Torah occasions into light-headed, nonsensical situations in order to make people feel comfortable. That's not a Torah feeling of comfort. That's a nightclub feeling of comfort. And to turn Torah into a nightclub, chas v'sholom, that we don't do. Torah is serious business. That doesn't mean it's not pleasurable. That doesn't mean it's not nice, that it doesn't have yishuv and calmness and pleasure. Yes, it does. But not tzchok. Tzchok has no place in Torah. Light-headed laughter and jocularity really has no place in Torah at all. I always give the example, just look around at the faces of these people on the wall. All of them are relaxed, all of them are calm, some of them are, one sees a bit of torment in them, but most of them are calm, relaxed. Look at this face, the gentleman is still alive, the Steitler. What a pleasurable face, look at the smile in his eyes. But you won't see lightheadedness in one of them. Seriousness, even in that smile there's that look of seriousness. At all times he's serious. If one's involved in a Torah life, there's not a moment in one's life where one isn't serious, not one moment. And one can't try and pretend that that isn't so just to make Torah sound more popular. If you don't like it, tough luck when you're not for Torah. That's what Torah is. Torah is serious. It's nice, there are the lighter times and there are the heavier times. There are the deeper times and there are the more superficial times. There are the social times, the more social times and the more inward times. There are the gathering times and there are the separateness times. There are the Yom Kippurs and there are the Purims and there's the Simchas Torahs and there's the Pesach. There are all sorts of different emotions. But never lightheadedness. Always seriousness. That's Torah. Miut Tzchok, cut down on the joking. It's not part of Torah at all. And it can't go together with the malus of Torah, with the acquisition of Torah.
And the Medrash in fact says in Tanah de Be'elio, that while you're busy being mispalel, everybody's mispalel,
give me more knowledge, says the Tanah de Be'elio. You don't only have to pray that God gives you more knowledge, pray that God throws out of your mind some nonsense, because every bit of meaningless nonsense and jocularity that enters your mind pushes out a piece of Torah. Every joke that comes into your mind pushes out a piece of Torah. Everything light that comes into your mind pushes out a piece of Torah. Everything meaningless that comes into your mind pushes out a piece of Torah. It displaces it. And it's just as important to pray to the Ribono Shel Olam that he should clear our minds of nonsense than it is that we should pray to him to introduce into our minds Torah.
That's the end of the section on miut, on what one has to curtail. Now starts another section of midas. Until now we've done things that you need to do. Now starts midas, characteristics, character traits. Be'erech apayim, one needs to be patient.
The yishuv we talked about is a patience with oneself. Erech apayim is patience with others. So the yishuv is to be patient with yourself, not to be in such a hurry. Erech apayim is to be tolerant of others. That's terribly important, to be tolerant of others. Takes other people a little bit longer to understand something. So you explain it again a second time, it doesn't matter, a third time, a fourth time, a fifth time, as long as he's trying. Erech apayim, just have patience.
Belev toiv, generosity, terribly important. One can't achieve much in Torah if one is mean. One needs lev toiv, one needs a good heart, one needs to be generous. And be'emunas chachomim, critical. Emunas chachomim is a trust that the chachomim know what they're talking about.
And that means all the Chachomim. There can be machlokes among the Chachomim. You can have different views among the Chachomim. But Emunas Chachomim involves a trust that they know what they're talking about, that they're far greater than we are, and that what they're saying is Torah min Hashemayim. It's absolute Torah. How we have to act, there are halachas about that. This Chacham might say A, and that one might say B. They're both, we have to have Emunas Chachomim in both of them. How we have to act, there are halachas, majorities, and who our rabbeim are, and who we have followed. There are all sorts of halachas as to how we act. But how we act does not affect our opinion of the person of the opposite camp. Not if he's a chacham. We have to have emunas chachomim. You know, there have been a lot of discussion among the Gedolei Yisrael of today on matters concerning Israeli politics, particularly the involvement in Lebanon that we've had now, and the involvement of the returning of occupied territory.
mean, various views among the Chachamim, and there's been quite a lot of heated arguments among the Chachamim. I'm not going into the pros and the cons of the different views. All that makes me literally feel sick is when one finds little boys, little youngsters like us, passing opinions on that Chacham, wrong, he's wrong, doesn't know what he's talking about, doesn't understand. Who are we? Shach, this one, that one, talking nonsense. Who are we? One thing you have to know, that if a Rav Shach gives a psak, whether we have to go like that or we don't have to go like that, whether it's politically astute or it isn't, one thing I'll assure you, if you go and ask him why, you'll go through many sugyas of Gemara and Halacha. It's all worked out al pi Halacha that that's the right thing to do. I don't say that that's how we have to pass them. It's a different thing. Nor do I say that's how the Israeli government has to pass them. I don't know. That's a different discussion altogether, who they have to follow. But emunas chachomim, to know that they do know what they're talking about, very much so. And that it's all based in Torah, it's not their opinion. What do you think, Rav Shach wakes up one morning and says, I think it's wrong. My opinion is that it's wrong. It's not there. It's hours and hours and weeks of work, day and night in the sugyas of Gemara. Day and night. Drawing conclusions, working out al pi halacha, what is the right thing to do. And he's not interested in the politics of the situation. And he's not interested in what the parties think and what the voters think and what the army thinks. He's interested in what is right al pi halacha. And that's how he draws his conclusion. Again, I say there might be others who put in the same kind of effort and reach different conclusions. And we have to know how to paskin, that's a different thing. But never let anybody think of any of the Gedolei Yisrael that they say what they say lightly, or that it just flies off the top of their head. This is halacha, this is law that they've paskined clearly and properly. And let none of us be so arrogant as to think that it's not of great value, that it's not worked out, and that it's not divrei Elohim chayim, that it's not the word of the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. That's emunas chachomim. Bekabolus hayisurim, we have to accept upon ourselves yisurim, pain. Sounds a bit of a Christian concept, lahavdilah of havdolus. Bekabolus hayisurim, firstly in the simple sense, if one fights against one's yisurim, everybody has yisurim, everybody has suffering. Big suffering, little suffering, just sometimes it's pinpricks, sometimes it's inconveniences, but that also is suffering. Sometimes it's more than that. We all have it. Go through stages, nobody's going to go through his life without suffering. And we have to know how not to fight it also. How to be makabel. We accept, we try and find out why, what's wrong, are we doing something wrong, we try and correct. But not to try and spend our lives fighting yisurim. It takes a lot of energy away. One's makabel. Sometimes as a big wave comes in the sea, and a little child is caught in that big wave, thinks that that's the end of the world. He thinks he'll never get out of it. And the father says, don't worry, you just duck. And the wave goes over. And when you look at the world with a bit of a historical perspective, and one realizes one has tzoras, one goes through difficult times, sometimes they're longer, sometimes they're shorter, but gamze yavo, that also will pass. One has to be able to duck them and jump over them. Some waves one has to jump over, and some waves one has to duck under, and some waves one has to surf on. But don't fight against the wave. Don't stand up and try and fight the wave. It doesn't work like that at all. But be mekabel yisurim, there's a way to do it. One can be mekabel yisurim. Chaim Volozhner goes further and he says, included in this being mekabel yisurim is actually bringing it upon yourself. He says, but not bringing it upon yourself by jumping into a thorn bush, chas v'shalom. Bring it upon yourself by the very ways we've just discussed. The man is memayit shino, that half an hour of sleep that he was going to have, and he switches that to half an hour of learning. That's yisurin, it's pain, it's suffering. And what a pleasurable suffering it is. That's the suffering that sharpens one. That's the suffering that refines one. And at the same time, the Ribbono Shel Olam takes it off the book. He counts that as suffering. And if he was planning, Chas V'Sholom, that you've got to go through a certain amount of suffering, and you took that half an hour and you switched it from sleeping to Torah, he says, right, Yotzegevim, it's done, that suffering is done himself. And then you sit and you work and the sweat pours down your face as you try and understand a piece of learning. And you can't, and you phone somebody up and you say, can I come over to you? And you get into your car and you go, and it's all tircha, it's tzar, it's effort. You've got to leave your home and it's raining, and you go with somebody and you sit with a Gemara and you ask him to help you, and he spends time, and you go home again back. That's all tzar, it's yisurin. But what's yisurin? And the Ribbono Shel Olam counts that off as well. It's all part of the yisurin.
and at 5:30 in the morning to get up for the davening. It's yisurim, it's tzad, particularly in the winter months. Ribbono Shel counts that as yisurim. So Chaim Volozhiner says it's possible just by sharpening one's Torah life to write off a whole lot of the yisurim that one has to. And that's part of being mekabel yisurim, to accept upon oneself the suffering, means to accept upon oneself in areas where you know you can grow out of the suffering. We all have to suffer. Our only choice is in what we suffer. And we are masters over that choice. We can choose in what we want to suffer. Sometimes chas v'sholom not. Sometimes it gets too much for us, and the Ribbono Shel has to bring on more suffering than we would have chosen. But under normal situations, we can choose. You want to lie in bed late in the morning and not come to daven, so you better suffer somewhere else that day. You want to go to bed early, so you better suffer somewhere else that day. You don't want to sweat over the tosfos, you find a difficult gemara, you close your gemara and you go and you sit down by the pool, so you better suffer somewhere else that day. But if you want to choose the suffering to be in the area of growth and in the area of knowledge and in the area of learning, it's up to you. You can make your own choices.
It's Kabbalah HaYisurim. Hamakiras Mekoma, you must know your place. Hamakiras Mekoma means many things. It means knowing your place in terms of humility. Have you noticed a change here? Up till now, they all begin with a base. Bekabalos Yisurin, Beemunos Chachomim, Beerech Apayim, Beyishuv, Bemikra, Bemishne, Bemiyut Chayre, etc. Be, with.
That's an action that has to be done. Now we're talking about a certain type of person. We've gone the halfway mark. We've done 24. And the first 24 talk about actions which need to be done. And the second 24 talk about a certain type of person that you need to be. And the first thing that you need to be is a Makiris Mekrimo. Somebody who knows his place. Firstly, in the simple sense of modesty, your own limitations. Secondly, one of the Mephoshim also bring a Makiris Mekrimo means that you must have a place. A Makiris Mekrimo, you must have a place. You must have a particular base of medrash to which you belong. You must have a particular shir that you attend. In that shir, you must have a particular seat that you occupy. That's all part of the Kinyan of Torah. To do it that way, that there should be that kind of consistency. That it's not damn around here and there, and sometimes here and sometimes there, and so, not like that. Certain there's a Makiris Mekoma. I know my place. I know who my Rebbe is. I know who my Rabbeim are. I know what school I belong to. I have a certain confidence. It's not just Hefka that I picked a bit up here and I pick a bit up there and I say, right, where do you come from? Who are you? What's your Makon? What Shita do you go by? What Shita? I don't know. I learn. No. A Makiris Mekoma means a person knows where he comes from. He knows who his Rabbeim were. He knows what Shita it is. He knows why it's that Shita. And he follows it consistently. He has a yeshiva that he belongs to. He has a Beis HaMedrash that he belongs to. He has Shiurim that he belongs to. He has a Rebbe who trains him and who builds him. And he knows that it's consistent, and he knows that he grows. And his Makiris Mekoma, he knows his place.
V'ha-Sameach Bechelko. That in itself leads to Sameach Bechelko. Sameach Bechelko doesn't just mean in the physical sense, because we've really passed that. Sameach Bechelko is part of Miyut Schoiro and Miyut Derecheres.
Unless you're satisfied with what you've got, you can't curtail your business activities. Says Reb Chaim Volozhiner, Sameach Bechelko is in your learning. Take pleasure in what you've already learned. Don't sit and worry all the time about what you don't know. It's part of the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara can kill any budding Talmid Chochem with disillusionment and despair and despondency about what he hasn't yet done. And that's not what it should be. Sameach Bechelko is to take pleasure and joy in what you have achieved. One little word you've understood, one shiur you've absorbed, one Rashi you've understood, one piece of Gemara you've understood, the Rambam you've understood, the Rif you've understood, the Rosh you've understood, the Mashal you've understood, a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos you've understood. It's incredible. Each one of these things is incredible. To really know and understand what a Mashal said. Do you know what that is? If the Mashal was alive today, you wouldn't have the chutzpah to go and talk to him. You wouldn't have the chutzpah to walk into his Beis HaMedrash and listen to a shir. And you're sitting down and you understand the shir of the Mashal. It's incredible. That's something to be proud of and to take joy of. It's not something to think, oh, but I only know one Mashal. There's a whole sefer, two volumes, but I know one of them. That's the Yetzer Hara. Zohar Sameach Bechelko. Sameach Bechelko is to take pleasure and joy in what you've done already. And slowly to do a little bit more, and a little bit more, and a little bit more. But all the time with the emphasis on what you've done, not the emphasis on what you haven't yet done.
And that's part of Amakiris Mekoma. If you're Makir Yomokim, if you have a place, and you're consistent, and you belong, and you're part of a system, and you are progressing, you know you're going somewhere.
When it's running around here and running around there and a little bit here and a little bit there, that's when you start worrying about what you haven't learned. And you learn something here and then you learn something there, and you realize from what you learned there that you haven't learned enough there, and you run back there, and then you can drive one mashuga, can tear one into a million pieces. Hamakiris mekoimoi leads one to asameach bechelke.
Next is ha'oseh siog lidvorov, one has to make a fence for one's words, which also means many things. It means one has to speak carefully so that one isn't misquoted as far as that is possible. And it means also ha'oseh siag lidvorov,
create a fence to your authority. Don't speak beyond your area of competence and authority. In Torah there's no such thing as an opinion. We don't have such a thing as an opinion. We have psak. You don't ask the rov an opinion. You ask for a psak. Because an opinion is personal. Opinion is what I think. That's not what one wants to know. In Torah you're not passing opinions of what you think. You're passing opinions on what is emes. What is the truth? And therefore be careful at all times not to pass opinions in areas which are not yours. For a layman, for me to pass an opinion on a matter of medicine is meshuggah. It's madness. It's absolute idiocy. What do I know about it? So as an opinion, it's worthless. It has no validity. As truth, it's hit and miss. It might be right. It might be wrong. It has no value. And for a doctor to pass an opinion in law, and for a lawyer to pass an opinion in education, and for an educationist to pass an opinion in criminology, and each one his own area. It's not the way. One talks in the area of one's own authority. One has to be careful to limit one's words. And not to be afraid to say, you know, I can't tell you anything here, because I don't have a masoira on that. I haven't been taught anything on that. I don't know. I don't have the key to it. I don't know. I don't understand it. As Moshe showed me last night in this week's Sedra, Rashi says on a particular word, he says, Eini Yodea. I don't know why the Torah writes this there. I don't know what it comes to teach us. Rashi's not afraid to say, Eini Yodea. I don't know. Haven't been taught. We don't have to know everything. We have to have an approach. We have to have a way of tackling problems. We have to have integrated understandings. But we don't have to know everything. The Ribbono Shel Olam is not going to come down on us like a ton of bricks because we didn't know something. He'll come down on us like a ton of bricks for being dishonest, for pretending to know something that we didn't know, for thinking we know something that we didn't know. And that will come down on us. For learning something incorrectly, for making mistakes that shouldn't have been made, for carelessness, for lack of depth. That we're responsible for. But we can't be expected, particularly in our generation, to know everything. Can't be. We'll be excused for that. We've got to be able to be oseh siag lidvorov, to be able to say where we don't know, that's out of my area of authority. I don't know. Somebody asked me only the other day what I thought of a particular style of learning, and all I could say is, I don't know. It's not the way I was taught. I haven't been given an authority to say that it's a good way of learning. I haven't been given an authority to say it's a bad way of learning. All I know is it's not our way of learning. That's not the way we do things. That's all the authority that one can have. One has to be oseh siog lidvorov. Ve'einoy machazik tovel le'atzmoy. And one mustn't hold oneself, if one's achieved something in one's learning, don't hold it as being your own achievement. Einoy machazik tovel le'atzmoy. It's not necessarily your own achievement. One has to see it as a gift of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ohuv. One has to be loved. What does that mean, one has to be loved? Ohuv. There are many people who love the Ribbono Shel Olam, and they do the most despicable things. And they think it's okay, because they love the Ribbono Shel Olam after all. That's not enough. Before you love the Ribbono Shel Olam, check whether he loves you. That's more important. And it's not like the Christians say that he loves everybody. He doesn't. He despises people too. And he's disgusted with people too sometimes. And sometimes he loves somebody one day and he's disgusted with him the next day. And his love or disgust of a particular individual depends on the way he conducts himself. Depends on his midas, on his character, on his refinement, on his nobility, on the way he does things, on his integrity, on his seriousness of intention. Always check, does the Ribbono Shel Olam love me? That's more important than my loving the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Ribbono Shel Olam is not going to be made or broken by whether I love him or not. I will be made or broken by whether he loves me or not. And one has to check that one is Ohuv. Always check that you're Ohuv. That you're the kind of person that if you were God, you would love. And sometimes one becomes quite shattered at the answers to that very question that one asks oneself. If I was God, would I love me? And just look at it very carefully. And sometimes when one looks around one and one sees the way people behave and the things people one does, ask oneself, when you want to check the religious stature of an individual, don't ask yourself, Does he love God? Is he a God-fearing man? Ask yourself, is he loved by God? Is the Rebbe Shalom getting nachas now? Does the Rebbe Shalom enjoy that kind of behavior from his yireim, from those who are supposed to fear him? Somebody enjoys seeing? And if one thinks that's what the Rebbe Shalom enjoys seeing, maybe one has a kinky view of what the Rebbe Shalom is. But if one has a Torah-dic view of the Rebbeinu Shlomo, one begins to understand that not everything is ohuv and not everybody is loved at all times. There are times when the Rebbeinu Shlomo gets very despondent and upset at the way we behave. And then once you're loved, ohev es ha-mokom, then you can love the Rebbeinu Shlomo, and ohev es ha-brius, and you can love humanity. Those two then go together. You can't love God and not love humanity. You can't love humanity and not love God. If you love God, He made people, so you love people too. If you love people, God made people, so you've got to love God too. The two go together, you can't separate them. And those three, in fact, have to go together. You must be Ohuv, Ohuv es Amokum, Ohuv es Abrius. Ohuv es Atzadokah is to love righteousness. Not just to respect righteousness, to love righteousness. Ohuv es ha-meishorim, to love straightness. Do you know what love means? The Gemara says, Ahavo mekalkeles es ha-shuro. When one is in love, one does peculiar things. One does all sorts of funny things. We have the case of Avram fixing up his own donkey, and the Gemara says, didn't he have any servants to fix up his donkey? Does he have to go and span his own asses in? And the Gemara says, he's so in love with the Rebbeinu Shlomo that he does funny things sometimes. Ahavo mekalkeles es ha-shuro. Love sometimes makes one. And ohev es ha-meishorim, loving straightness. That means being prepared to do funny things for straightness and for righteousness. Being prepared to sacrifice an awful lot and to put one's head on a block for it sometimes and to lose a job for it sometimes and to lose money and reputation for it sometimes if necessary. I'm ohev es ha-meishorim, what is straight I love and what is crooked I despise.
Ohev es ha-teichochos, one must also love rebuke. And rebuke is here in the plural, the Mephoshim say, because there are two kinds of rebuke. One has to love being rebuked and rebuking, provided one knows how to do it.
That one mustn't shun it, one mustn't run away from it. One has to appreciate it when somebody tells one that something one's done is wrong. And one has to also be able to go up to somebody and say, excuse me, but what you did is not right. For the following reasons it's not right, and this isn't the way it should be done. And I hope you don't mind me telling you, but I'm sure you'll appreciate it. That's ohev es ha-teichochos, to be able to rebuke and take rebuke.
Somebody who can't do that can't really play a part in a Torah society.
A Torah society is a society of growth. And one of the important elements of growth is feedback. You need to feel from the people around you how you're doing. And if you're functioning among people who don't love rebuking or who don't love to be rebuked, the dynamics of the relationship cease to exist. One has to have that flow.
Umisrachek min ha-kovod, one has to run away from kovod, one has to run away from honor, from politics and from all these things. Not just keep, avoid it. Misrachek doesn't mean avoid, misrachek means distance yourself from it.
If kovod is on this side of the room, you go to the other side of the room. One Rosh Hashiva said to me just this week, he said, somebody asked me, how is it that I managed to keep out of politics? And I said to him, I don't keep out of politics, I flee from politics. Politics isn't the kind of thing you can keep out of. It catches you. You have to flee from it. And COVID is the same. If you want to keep out of COVID, you have to be misrachet, you have to pull yourself to the other end.
The loimegis liboi betalmudoi, not to become arrogant in one's learning. Terribly important. The way one ensures not becoming arrogant in one's learning is retaining a careful sense of proportion of the greatness of the people one is studying.
When one finds Rosh Yeshivas who belittle other Rosh Yeshivas and who belittle the earlier authorities, then you know that you're going to produce a Talmud who is Megis Liboi B'Talmudah. When you start giving a shiur and you say, and you know what? Had Reb Shimon Shkop learnt like us, he wouldn't have had any kashis. It would have been simple. That's when you know you're destroyed. You know what? The Ketor HaKhoshin, he didn't realize it. To learn like this, there's no kashis. Kasha falls away. He didn't think learning like you. Rabbi Kivaiga's sons write about him that anybody who thinks he's answered Rabbi Kivaiga's question is making a mistake. Rabbi Kivaiga worked out all these answers. And he rejected every one of them. Every one of them. And Maharosh Yeshiva taught us that when Rabbi Kivaiga leaves something as a question, he's not leaving it as a question for you to answer. He's leaving it as a question to tell you that if you have this question, the whole learning is wrong. Something he didn't work out, but the question doesn't have an answer. So think for a moment, I've answered Rabbi Kivaiga's question. That's Megis Libri. That's becoming arrogant in the extreme. You must ensure that in one's learning and in one's teaching, that never comes out. Chas v'sholem, one retains at all time tremendous respect for other Gedolei Yisrael, and particularly for those who've gone before us. And even if we think we've answered them, we think that this way of learning, we don't understand why he didn't learn like this. We don't understand why he didn't see the possibility, or why he rejected the possibility of learning in this particular fashion. But we don't say, oh, we've answered his kasha. It's not like that at all. And it's a subtle thing, and it's something one has to watch.
And one doesn't take joy in paskening shilas. It's no big joy to pasken a shilas. It's a tremendous responsibility, and the awareness of that responsibility takes away any kind of pleasure that there is. One tries to keep out of it. One tries to manage not to do it where possible.
Friend has it through it with him. You learn it through with him. Umachiyot instructions is how to learn bechavrusa. The first one is that your chavrusa learning has to be noisei ba'oil im chaveiro. You're not there to teach. You're not there to preach. You're not there to give a shir when you're learning chavrusa. When you're learning chavrusa, it's noisei ba'oil im chaveiro. You're there to work things out together, to go through his conflicts. And machriyot lekavzchus, don't start off with the assumption that he's wrong and I'm right. Try and show him his rights. All your learning should be dedicated to showing him his rights. But if you can't, if you really believe he's wrong, and that he's on the wrong line, don't hit him. Switch the conversation around and ensure that the discussion revolves around, look, let's not discuss who's right and who's wrong. Let's discuss what's right and what's wrong. It's not, am I right or are you right? Am I wrong or are you wrong? Let us discuss what is right, what is true, and what is false. Not who is right and who is false. It's an instruction on how one learns Bechavrusa. When two colleagues are learning together, that's the way they have to learn. And then there will be peace. And there will be Ma'abidu Yala Emes. They can fight and fight, but they're not fighting against each other. They're fighting to understand what is true and what is right.
Ma'abidu Yala Sholim. That says Reb Chaim Volozhiner, if you can't even do that, if he doesn't have the bigness, you try and discuss truth and he tells it always its personalities.
Ma'amidu ala sholem. Tell him he's right. Good. You can't have a discussion. There's no way you can get. And you leave it peaceful.
Umis yashiv liboy besalmudoy. And one must let one's heart sink into one's learning. Don't just learn with your brain. When one's learning something, when one's reading something, when one's studying something, let your heart sink into the learning. Yeshuv Adas, really apply your mind into it. Take your time, don't be in a hurry. Until you really feel that your heart is satisfied with the conclusion. Not just that your brain is satisfied with your conclusion, that it's really been well worked out. Shoyel Umeshuv, you must be a person who knows how to ask and who knows how to answer. That's the learning process. Asking and answering. If you can't ask a kasha, you can't learn. If you can't answer a kasha, you can't learn. It doesn't mean you have to be able to answer everything you ask. But you have to have the ability to ask and the ability to answer. The ability to ask depends on the ability to notice inconsistency, to notice to be mechalek, to notice the two things that appear to be similar are in fact dissimilar. That's what it means to ask. To answer is the opposite, to show the two things that appear to be dissimilar are in fact similar. And those are the two skills one needs in learning. Shoyel umeshiv. One must be able to draw distinction in that which appears to be the same. And one must be able to create similarity between things that appear to be different.
Shomea u'moisif. One must be able to hear something and add to it. Not just read and translate. Somebody says, you know, give a vote, you're a kesheva brocha, say a vote, you get up and you read and translate a piece of Rashi. That's not a Talmud Chof. Shomea u'moisif. You must be able to learn something and of your own. To the presentation, an understanding, something that you notice, a question, an answer, a deduction, something, an example. Always be Moisif, Shomeyahu Moisif. Don't just quote. You don't have to be a robot to quote. Shomeyahu Moisif. You're going to be a Talmid Chacham if you're able to add a little bit of your own to what you're saying. It must remain authentic. You're adding to what you heard. You're not adding something of your own completely disconnected to what you heard.
One must learn with the intention of teaching. If your learning is really valuable to you, you will want to pass it on to others. If you see somebody in Soros, you will want to help them.
Rabbi Noach Weinberg gives the example. He says that if you see somebody playing cricket and holding the bat upside down, you'll go up to them and you'll say, hey, for that, turn it the other way around. That's the way you play cricket. You'll teach him. And in Torah, if you see somebody with a mistaken idea, why don't you go up to him and put him right and correct him, teach him? If Torah is important enough for you, if it's critical enough for you, you'll do that. And our learning has to be with the intention of teaching. Our learning has to be with the intention of passing it on to others too.
And one should always learn with the intention also of doing. Whenever you finish the piece of learning, before you leave your sefer, ask yourself, in what way does this change my life?
There is no learning in Torah which is so abstract that it doesn't change your life. It's not always something direct. You might be learning about an ox that gored a cow. That doesn't mean it's going to change your life in matters of ox goring cows. But in every piece of Gemara and every Chazal and every piece of Torah, there is a principle. And that principle can change your life, and you need to find that principle. And you need to be able to, at the end of any session of learning, at the end of a sugya of Gemara, at the end of a halacha that you've learned, at the end of a mishnah, at the end of a shiur, you should be able to say to yourself, in what way am I going to act differently to what I was? Because if you can't do that, that's also not learning. And your learning takes on a completely different tone of seriousness. If you know every time you sit down with a sefer, if you know every time you go into a shiur that you're going to come out of that a different person in action, and your listening is different, your understanding is different, your reading is different, because it becomes important. It's going to affect your life, and therefore you put a lot of effort into understanding correctly. But if you're going into it as an intellectual exercise, it doesn't make much difference if you heard A or you heard Z. It doesn't, what difference does it make in the end of it? You're not going to change because of it, so you don't listen that carefully. One listens carefully when it's going to affect you.
Hamachkim es raboy. Machkim as rabbi means that even when you make a lot of progress, and it is a tendency very often when one made a lot of progress,
particularly if one has been away from one's Rebbe for a long time, to belittle the Rebbe, you think you've overtaken him already. You forget where he was when you were, you didn't understand him properly when you were learning by him in any case. And so when you were down there, you thought he was up here. In fact, he was way higher than that. But you thought he was here. Now you think you're here, and you think he's still there. So now you think you're a little bit, you know, more than your Rebbe did. He was nice for me when I was young and when I was starting. But now, I've outgrown him. Hamachkim es Rabbi, no. Always attach more Chochmah to your Rebbe than you think. Because he's always a lot wiser than you think he is. You'll never realize. I only realize now some of the things that my Rabbein told me. And I only wish now that my time in Yeshiva was now, not there. Now I could appreciate it. Now I can understand what they're talking about. Then I didn't. Then I thought I understood what they're talking about. It's years later that you begin to understand the chokhmah, the depth, the brilliance, and the greatness of these people. That's machkim es rabbi. Increase his chokhmah rather than decrease his chokhmah. You can only learn from somebody whose chokhmah you value, not from somebody whose chokhmah you've diminished. To be mechavei neshmua is to understand something that you've heard correctly, to be consistent in your learning and in what you've learnt. And finally, to quote people. When you say something you've heard, don't say it in your own name. And there's several levels to understand this. Firstly, the simple level, just that. Don't quote it in your own name if you heard it from somebody else. Don't even say, I heard it said. If you remember who it was, say who it was. It's just find me this. Otherwise, it's a kind of theft. You're stealing. It's not right. Secondly, it's important because, as Reb Chaim Volozhiner says, very often a person says something and it doesn't make sense. You'll say to me, you heard from one of the Gedolei Yisrael ABC. I say, it's very strange, it just doesn't make sense. If you would have told me who it was, then I would have understood it. You would have told me under what circumstances he said it, then I understood it. To say something b'shem omro means you ensure that the statement is seen and understood in the context of its author. And a statement in Torah Shebaal Peh, when we're talking about the oral law, which all of Torah is today, it's important that a statement is made b'shem omro, that you see it in the context of he who said it. Then you'll understand it. You can't just take a statement out of context and try and understand it. It's important to understand who the author of the statement was. In order to know what he really meant, in order to know what he was saying. So often things are misunderstood. Why? Because they're quoted without giving the background, the circumstances under which they were said, to whom they were being said. You know, if I'm talking to a group of professionals and businessmen about the role of business life in one's Torah existence, what am I going to stress? How you've got to see your Torah life as part of your business, how you've got to see your business life as part of your Torah, and as part of the Avodas Hashem, etc., etc. And what would happen if I was speaking to some Bokhrim in Ponovitz Yeshiva? What am I going to say to them? Yeah, you must all go out to business and you must see business as part of it. No. Then you talk differently. You're learning and there must be nothing but your learning and full-time learning, and that's all there must be, and dedicate yourself to it absolutely, and there should be no distraction whatever, and don't involve yourself in business and in professions or anything else at the moment. Just learn and learn and learn. How can you say the same thing? Depends who you're talking to. To say Adolah B'Shem Omroi means to understand the context in which it was said and the context to whom it was said. The circumstances. To say something B'Shem Omroi gives it a dimension of understanding which one otherwise wouldn't have had.
And those are the 48 milos. We've gone through them very quickly and superficially, but those are the 48 milos, the 48 levels that one has to go through, the 48 activities one has to engage in if one wants to be koyinet Torah, if one wants to make Torah one's own.
And once one has made it one's own, one can begin to love it. And once one loves it, one brings it close to one. And once one brings it close to one, one starts to understand it. This is even before you understand it. This is just to bring you to the level of loving it. It's only after you've loved it that you start understanding it. But first has to come the love, and the love comes from the kinyan. Just as the love of a husband for his wife comes as a result of the kinyan, of the acquisition which takes place under the chuppah, so the love of a ben Torah for his Torah comes as a result of these 48 kinyonim, these 48 milas that he performs, these 48 steps he goes through in order to be koyne Torah, in order to acquire Torah and to make it his own.